Well, today is a little bit different on the Focal Points podcast. This is episode 52, and I'm so excited that you are here with me. I love my partnership with Enphoto, and I love hearing from people who listen to this podcast. And I'm so glad that you have embraced this project, and I'm here for the ride for however long we choose to make this happen. But today, I thought I would do something a little bit different. A lot of you know how I feel about business. A lot of you know certain parts of my story, but you don't know a lot about my story. So I invited my friend Heather Lachinen back to actually interview me. And she sent me a list of like 25 questions. And I said, Heather, this is a lot. I don't think we're going to get to all this on this podcast because, you know, I have a tendency to ramble and I want this to be a real fluid conversation. She said, that's okay. I'm not going to ask you all these questions, but just be ready for all these questions. So in the podcast today, you're going to hear about how I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. You're going to hear about different things that I experienced in my entrepreneurial journey and also things that I experienced in my business journey. And I hope that some of the things that I share today can show you that no matter where you come from, that you can be a success in this business. And I hope that they encourage you in your journey as a photographer. So welcome to the Focal Points podcast, our 52nd episode. I am so glad that you're here. Thank you to Enphoto for sponsoring this project. And let's go ahead and let's get started. You are listening to Focal Points, a podcast by Enphoto hosted by Dori Howell. You are in the right place to learn how to build a dynamic and sustainable photography business that you love. So as I said in the intro, I invited my friend Heather to come and interview me for the podcast. I talk to a lot of people, but she is here with a list of questions a mile long of things that she wants to know about me. And we're not going to get to all those questions. I can just say this right now, but we're just going to see where the conversation takes us. And I'm going to trust that Heather is not going to ask me anything too embarrassing or inappropriate at this point.
Oh gosh. In time. Yeah, I hope not. But thank you so much for having me. I actually am very curious. So I've been following you for a while. You are like a matriarch in our industry, especially around in-person sales. Mm-hmm. And so when we became friends, I am truly curious as to how this all came to be. So take me back to how you got started in photography, because you haven't done it your entire career.
No. Oh, no. I bounced around. So I went to school for vocal performance. So I was on my road to be a classical opera singer. And then
that's not something you hear every day.
Yeah, that isn't anything that you hear every day. And I loved the music. I loved doing it. But living in Washington, D.C., I think with just a lot of different creative fields is that it's very hard to make a living as a professional vocalist. And it's also very hard to make a living as a professional vocalist who actually has a life. You know?
Because why? What does that look like?
You want to have a family, you want to get married, you want to hang out with your husband and, you know, have a kid and all those types of things. So what ended up happening was I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. My dad was an entrepreneur. He was in the warehouse equipment, forklift type genre. He was not creative, but he was an entrepreneur. And then also my mom's parents were entrepreneurs. My grandfather, when he was alive, he owned a service station and he had polio as a child. And so he was actually paraplegic, so he couldn't use his legs, but he could operate and work on cars. And so he had a gas station basically with a service bay. And that's how he made his money. And so that's how my mom grew up, with the service station. And then when he passed away, my grandmother was an entrepreneur and she kind of went into this warehouse equipment business as well. And then my dad, when he came along, he started a different avenue.
Wait, how in the world did she do that back then? How? What year are we talking about?
This would have been, oh my gosh, in the 50s. Probably.
How did she do that? That was not a thing for a woman to be an entrepreneur and have, especially in a business like that.
Right. It wasn't a thing. And I think, you know, people are resilient and people need to do what they need to do. And I believe my grandfather died when I was very, very young. So I believe the business, the gas station and the service station that they operated was actually in Rochester, New York. They came and they settled and they moved to Anaheim, California. And I think it was a situation with the weather. It was better for him to be in a drier, warmer environment than in Rochester.
That's a big move.
It's a big move. And also, I think, you know, when you're dealing with health issues back then with polio and other types of things, weather was an issue. So a lot of people traveled to where it was warmer and drier because it was healthier for them. And so they settled on Anaheim. I'm really not too sure why. And so that's where my mom grew up. And then when my dad was stationed in the Navy, he ended up in Long Beach and they met on a blind date, little backstory for you. And he started, after he got out of the Navy, he joined up with my grandmother in this warehouse equipment company. And my grandpa was still alive at the time. So three entrepreneurs ready to go, right?
So okay, that's interesting because I grew up with zero. I did not have any so this was kind of coursing through your veins.
Yeah, so like I remember growing up helping my dad with marketing mailers because everything was done, you know, we didn't have the internet. People were finding businesses through the Yellow Pages, which a lot of people may not even know what those are, what the Yellow Pages are, right? We couldn't just pull up our phone because our phone was attached to the wall and had a rotary dial on it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So he would design these printed mailers and send them out. My sister and my responsibility was to take the labels because you couldn't print on the mailers. You actually affixed labels to them. So when every quarter, when my dad was getting ready to do a big mailer, that was my sister's and my job. And that's how we made money, was to put the labels on all the mailers and tie them up for the post office and get them ready to go. So we grew up in a house whereas if you want money, you need to make your own money. Like
you just
figure it out. You bootstrap it together. Nothing is going to be handed to you because you don't, like, I don't remember this being an attitude from my dad, and I could actually ask him, but I never really got the idea, like, you want to work for the man, like, be your own boss, create your own destiny type of thing.
I love that.
Which you hear a lot now, but you didn't hear a lot back then.
Zero. That is not at all what I heard. What I heard was you go work in a factory for 50 years and you die.
You get a nice, good, secure job. Security. Forever. Looking for the security. Well, that message was taught to us by the people who went through the Depression, who didn't have that security. So that was kind of a shift in things. So I grew up in a household that was very unusual when it came to how you make your money, what you want to do, and also pursuing things that interest you. So music was a thing for me. Engineering was a thing for my sister. So we pursued very different paths. And my path was always music, singing, singing, music, singing. So I went to college, traveled the world singing. But then when I got married, I'm like, I don't want the kind of work that I'm going to get here. I don't want to be at rehearsals until 11 o'clock at night, every night. My husband works as a government contractor. I want to be able to see him. So I opened a voice studio. That was my first foray into, besides babysitting through high school. So I never had a job in high school. I was a self-employed babysitter.
Okay.
And did very well with that. And then I opened a voice studio where I was teaching people how to sing. And then I had my child and I just kind of stopped everything for a while to be a mom. And for my first Mother's Day, and this is a very typical story, my husband got me my first DSLR. And,
yes.
Right? And we talked.
Do you remember what it was?
It was a Canon XTI.
Okay.
With the kit lens, right?
Yeah, of course.
Totally rocking. Yeah. And then like he had a friend who was a photographer and he started talking to me about raw photos and that I needed to edit. And like, I just went down the rabbit hole. Like we all have been there.
Yes.
The rabbit hole that never, ever, ever ends. And so I just started with that entrepreneurial spirit. I'm like, you know, people are wanting me to take pictures, but I'm not doing this for free. Like I'm not taking time out of my day, out of my family's life, putting together systems and business type things and doing it for free. So I pretty much started charging right out the gate. Even if it was just a couple $100, I pretty much started charging right out the gate. And that was how this whole thing was started. You know, just that was the origin story.
But what was your, as you starting your business, what was your, did you have a goal? Had you thought about where this might go? Like, what were you thinking?
I think my goal was always the fact that I needed to honor the financial health of the family. And if I was going to take time away from my family, then I needed to respect the fact that that time was valuable. And also, we all know photography is not cheap. Like, hello, have you priced out some of these mirrorless cameras lately? It's not cheap. It I couldn't not. Ask my husband to go to work and me stay home with the family. I couldn't ask him to support this quote unquote business. If I was going to have a business, it needed to be self-sustaining and it needed to be, I needed to earn that next camera or that next lens and that type of thing. And then it just kind of slowly evolved and I got better and I started marketing more. And those were also back in the day where like Facebook didn't make you pay for reach. And so people were getting,
people were getting
clients just by posting on a Facebook fan page and, you know, the glory days of social media, if you will.
Yes. Yes.
And, so then my business grew from there and I was doing newborn and family photography and I got involved because I had a daughter, you know, a baby, like a one-year-old, got involved in some moms groups and different community things and just made some really good friends that promoted me. And it just kind of just evolved just slowly by baby steps. Every new month there was a new step forward that I could be like, okay, that's like a stepping stone in my success to get to where I wanted to go.
Okay. Take me back to when you're starting to charge just because it's your time. And so you value your time. At what point in your mind were you like, okay, no, this is just beyond like charging and delivering photos. I'm going to turn this into a legitimate business.
Okay. So back in the day, there were not Facebook groups, right? We had online forums. Very similar to Facebook groups, but some you had to pay for, some you didn't have to. Clickin' Moms was an online forum, and then there was a forum called ILP, which was stood for I Love Photography. And I think
I remember
right,
it.
Right, ILP. So I was a friend turned me on to ILP, and I was just I would read through these forums and these answers and everything. And one person, it took one person to say, listen. If you show your images to your clients and you're sitting there at the time that they see them for the first time, you will make more money. Fireworks of glee went off in my heart. I'm like, say what? What was that? What was that you say?
Yeah, your ears perked up.
My ears perked up. And so I did a little more searching. And I'm also the kind of person that like, just jump in, just do it, right? Just jump in. So for my very next newborn client, I said, you know what? I'm just going to try this. I didn't even have a laptop at the time. I had to use my husband's Mac, which I didn't even know how to use. I'm a PC girl.
Okay.
And we put them in, I think, a bridge. And I took a notebook. I had some pricing information that sounded okay, you know, whatever.
You just basically made up. But.
Right. So I was charging $300 a session. And I had a few samples. Like I had a little baby canvas that I took. And I think I had an accordion album with me. And I walked out of there with a $926 sale.
Oh my gosh. You remember the exact number.
Yeah, it was $926. And I'm like, yeah.
And that was a lot for that
15 years ago.
Yes.
I'm like, what was I doing before? Like immediately tripled. Now, not every sale after that was tripled.
Of course.
But I'm like, I'm doing this in person. Like I'm going to offer them something that they don't get other places. I'm just going to sit with them. I'm going to guide them through their images. I never felt like I was selling anything.
Right.
And that
was a service.
It was a service. That's how that started.
Okay. But so you went right from like, I'm just taking photos and getting paid straight into legitimate business doing IPS, in-person sales.
Pretty much. Okay. There was a maybe like a year and a half like break in there.
Where you were still learning.
But I was still learning. But really when I decided I was going to offer products, that was like almost an immediate decision. And it was one of those things where I'm going to figure this out along the way.
And that's when you decided this is my job now?
I was a mom. I was a full-time mom. So it didn't really become my job until a couple years later. But I finally felt like I was in a situation where I could offer something that was different in my area and also something that people could appreciate, that I could get paid for, that justified the camera improvements that I wanted to make, the computer improvements that I wanted to make, and that type of thing without taking away from other family monies to support that. And there was, during that time, also there was like the spray and pray type controversy that happened yes, that a lot of people will have no idea what this is, where someone came out and said that if you were doing IPS and not giving your clients all the digital files for free, you're ripping them off and doing them a disservice. And that's where the split in the industry really started happening between product-based photographers and digital file, like all-inclusive photographers. And I think there's a place for us all to get along.
Of course.
Right? But yeah, so I leaned really heavy into like, no, why would I give someone just files? Like, I wanted them to have something that they hang on their wall. And
that was important to you.
Yeah. I don't want them to get it at Target when Target had photo labs.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I actually tested their print lab once just out of curiosity and it was horrific. Okay. Yeah. But this is, if we go back 15 years, this is really the very beginning of the digital in-person sales revolution. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the way that I can keep track of this is the fact that I got married 20 years ago this July. Okay. Mm-hmm. When we got married, our photographer shot on film and I have a roll of negatives, the shot on film, but we thought we were fancy because my husband is a techie, right? And we went to Tahiti for our honeymoon with our 1.3 megapixel digital camera.
Oh, you are so fancy.
Right. Now, granted, my big picture that I can print from those is like literally like a 12 by
Well, I was going to say 4x6, right? But now, yeah.
with some Photoshop help. So that really was 20 years ago was really the where things started shifting into the digital mode. So we started at 1.3, then we got the 3.1 megapixel camera, and then things started happening. And also during that time, the big shift into camera phones and iPhones and all of that was happening too. So there's been a huge transformation in technology. I just, in my marriage, it's the past 20 years. That's the way that I can put that time stamp on it that I don't know if anybody saw coming, but you know, my daughter who's 15 thinks that like, because I didn't have a cell phone or the internet, like I was raised with dinosaurs.
Oh, same. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
My like, son will make, my son is 15 and he makes comments like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Like we were raised in the dark ages.
Right. Like, did you have a TV, mom? You know?
Well, no, she knew we had a TV, but she doesn't think it was color. And she was looking for my high school yearbooks the other day. She's like, mom, well, they're all in black and white, right?
Oh no. My gosh. No, we actually had color. But what's interesting is, when we transitioned from film to digital, there was this idea that we just included the digitals. Mm-hmm. And then pretty quickly, it led into IPS, which I'm going to come back to that because you were a very, very early adopter of that. Mm-hmm. But previous to digital, when we were film, everything was IPS.
Right. IPS isn't new. And that's, right. that's the thing. It's like, no, it's not new. This is the way photography was sold. You didn't go.
Always.
Always. You always went and you always got the prints from your photographer. You always went and reviewed them in the studio. You always picked the frame in the studio. Yes. That's how it's always been done. And so the fact that there was this thing of thinking that it's new, I'm like, no, it's not.
It was always the thing.
This is the way it's always been. It's all-inclusive digital photographers. That process is new, right? So does it matter what came first? I don't know. But I think there is a certain amount of respect that needs to be put on of knowing what the industry and what your profession has gone through. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know any dark room or how from tintypes to all these things, mm-hmm. any some of the history behind it, I think learning that is a good idea because it just shows that you have a respect for the profession that you've decided to join.
Oh, so interesting. Yeah. Instead of just like jumping in and taking photos.
And right. And assuming that, oh, well, this is how some coach somewhere told me how to do this. So this is the way I have to run my business. And anyone who doesn't do it this way is ridiculous. Well, yeah, you might just be a little bit new in the industry. So take that with a grain of salt. One thing that I will not do with my clients is give them just a stack of images for them to store someplace randomly. I always provide with them some sort of storage box, and I love the options from Enphoto. The Folio Box is an ideal presentation and storage product. It's a handcrafted box, and you can pair it with a selection of prints that are either mounted or matted. And it has also a beautiful frame for a truly beautiful experience. You can also include the USB for their digital files, or you don't have to include that. It's purely customizable. It comes in a wide variety of colors, shapes, and sizes, and you definitely want to consider adding this to your product line today. And the best thing about it is that Enphoto offers you 75% off your first sample if you're a new customer. So head over to our show notes page to grab that discount today.
Well, hey, that actually leads to a good question is, do you think that there's a right or wrong way to start a photography business or run a photography business?
No. I think that there's certain things you want to avoid. I think you want to avoid undercharging. Mm-hmm. I think you want to avoid putting out crappy work, because there are photographers out there who put out some really bad, bad work and they sell it to people. And I think that's a disservice. I think you want to... I think what you want to strive for is to always keep learning, always be profitable, serve your clients well.
Profitable, that's key.
Right, profitable, right?
Yeah.
Serve your clients well with respect and dignity. Honor your agreements with them and get to know as many people as possible. That I think is
I love that. Meet a lot of people. That's key. I have a three-stage really simple approach to business. It's meet people, tell them you're a photographer, and make an offer. Mm-hmm. And the key is meeting people, because that's marketing.
Right. And I think with the onslaught of technology where we can be comfortable doing these things from home, right? And then we had COVID where we couldn't see anybody for 2 years, 3 years. We have a lot of people trying to build businesses only on social media.
Yes.
And that's not how successful businesses work. No successful business works that way. It's not just photography. No successful business works and can continue to grow if you do not get to know people in your community.
Yes. It
just doesn't work that way. And the most successful photographers that I have known throughout the course of this industry are very active in their community, whether it's Rotary Club, whether it's Toastmasters, whether it's, you know, Chamber of Commerce, all those different things. You have to get out of the house and meet people, because you need to let people know what you do.
That you exist.
And social media just doesn't really cut it anymore, unless you're going to pay a whole bunch of money. And even then, there's no guarantee.
Even then. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think I'm actually pretty lucky. I started my business in 2003 before it existed. And I built a very successful six-figure wedding photography business without social media.
Yeah.
And the cornerstone of my business was relationships.
Yeah.
Meeting people, being out in the community. Okay. What is one piece of advice you would give to a photographer who is starting their business now? Besides meet people.
Learn more about business than you do about photography.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
Because you will only spend about 20% of your time, if you have an active studio, you will only spend about 20% of your time actually shooting. And I see so many photographers spend so much time shooting and editing that it becomes they shoot 10% of the time, they edit 60% of the time, and then maybe they watch a YouTube video on business and post in a Facebook group when they run into a problem with a client. But learning how to actually run a business, the fundamentals of running a business, from your client experience to onboarding to your process with your clients, all of that takes time. It's not something that can just be purchased from a course or something like that. It takes time. You and I have both invested heavily, heavily into our businesses, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
But it's not like any one thing that we invested in was the magic pill. It's the combination of everything that we've invested in, where we've been able to pick and choose the different pieces and put them into something cohesive that works for us. Mm-hmm. That takes time, and it takes financial investment. You know, lawyers can't go to school for free. Usually bakers need to take some classes on how to make cakes, or intern or do something. Photographers need to invest in their education. So my number one thing is, like, I understand the creative side. It's fun to learn how to use your camera It's fun to learn how to use Photoshop. The business side is not always fun, but that's where you're going to make your money.
That's really good advice. Speaking of fun, in the last 15 years, what has been your favorite part of the job?
Working directly with my clients. I love meeting people. I love meeting people. I love making people cry when they see their images.
Yeah.
You know, I love knowing that I did something for them that probably they couldn't do anywhere else. And it's not because of my skill with the camera, because I always say, you know, I'm an adequate photographer, right? I do. It's okay. I know my way around a camera.
Right.
Some people might disagree, but I do an okay job. But it's the reactions that I get from people when they love what I do. And it's not only just temporary, like on social media, or like Instagram or Facebook, where they share a few pictures. It's the fact that they're walking by it every day in their hallway. And that the album that I gave them is the album they're going to pull out when their daughter graduates from high school or college or gets married. That those memories are going to last far beyond anything that I
could I sum that up by saying connection? It's the connection.
Yeah, it totally, 100% the connection. Yeah.
That's your favorite part. That was the most fun. What was your least favorite part?
Numbers. Math.
But you know how to add. People tell me math and I'm like, but you know.
Oh, I know. Here's the thing. I know how to do it. I can break down a pricing sheet like nobody's business. Like I know how to do it. That doesn't mean I want to do it.
Yeah, sure. That's fair. Ugh. Yeah. Okay. In your opinion, what is the most important personality trait or strength that someone would need to have to be successful as a photographer?
I think you need to have a cheerful personality or positive. I think you need to be positive because you're working with people and dealing with insecurities and that kind of stuff. So I think having a positive, flexible outlook is super important because we can set our policies. We can do our processes and set them in stone and think, okay, this is how it's going to be. And then the next client comes along and turns everything upside down. And you're like, wait a minute, what just happened here? So being flexible and being confident in that flexibility, I think is really important. So for example, I had a client once who came in for their IPS session and they wanted something that I didn't offer on my price sheet. They wanted, I can't even remember what it was, but they asked if I did it. And I'm like, yeah, if I can find it, I'll do it for you. And because I did know my numbers and because I could Google really quick, I just, hey, let me just do a little research real quick. And I did this. I could come up with a price on the spot that didn't undersell it. But I had confidence in that, realizing that, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. I may not do this again, but I'll learn from this experience and move forward. So positive, cheerful personality and always be flexible and always be willing to learn more.
Open-minded.
Yeah. You're never going to get done learning.
Right. Right. Ever. From now until forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
What is a common myth about having a photography business you think that people hold?
Oh my gosh. You get to photograph things all day. It must be so fun.
So fun. And you must be rich. I bet you make a ton of money.
I bet you make a ton of money. Yeah. For this $200 headshot session that I booked because I want to pay my phone bill this month.
Right. Like, seriously. Yeah. Really people don't realize, you know, I was at a wedding one time and a guy came up to me and he said, I wish I could make $5,000 in a day. And I was like, yeah, me too. Who makes $5,000 in a day? Yeah,
sign me up. Sign me up.
This was about 15 years ago. And I said, hey, do you see that bag over there? That's $35,000 worth of equipment in that bag. Right. There's a huge investment.
They don't understand that every time I step out to a session, I'm carrying $20,000 on my back. Right. Right. And the fact that it's a wedding is not just one day. Like, really? $5,000 for one day? Okay, I could do a bunch of those. But
yes,
that doesn't mean you're just like the editing and like, no, this wasn't one day. This was
and the
like,
client work and
this was 2 weeks worth of work. Like,
yes,
that's how this is going to go.
How did you get started in photography education?
So I was really active in a big, big Facebook group. I was a moderator there. And I went to, people may not remember this name, but Ken Whitmire was a legend in photography in the Pacific Northwest. And he was a legend in family photography. He owned a canvas company at the time called Canvas. Some people say it was Whitmire Canvas. It's not Whitmire Canvas anymore. And he liked what was going on in the Facebook group. And he invited a couple of us out to come to what he did was a wall portrait conference every year, which basically his love was selling wall portraits. So he was teaching you how to sell wall portraits. Now, Ken was 70 something at the time. Like, he had won the PPA Lifetime Achievement Award. Mm. This man knew what the deal was, yes. Right? Now, I could take one look at his pricing and said, hey, Ken, dude, you need to triple all this pricing because you probably haven't raised your prices in like 2 decades.
Right.
He was such a lovely man. He offered us an invitation to come out. And we had this Facebook group, and it was just one of those things that there was a happy hour the first night. And in being there, within the first 15 minutes, 3 people came up and said, how are you going to monetize this? Or can we buy your group?
Really?
Yeah. People wanted it. And I thought, well, why would I let you monetize it when I can do that?
Yeah. Did a bell go off in your head?
Kind of. I don't think, and I had a business partner at the time, and I don't think we really knew what we were sitting on. And then by the end of the week, we had a plan. We talked with some people. We had a plan, and I had the plan. I was the one who was like, yeah, we can do this. Mm-hmm. We can absolutely do this 100%. And so that was started pretty much about the same time Sue Bray started. Mm. And so—
Around what year was this?
17?
Yeah.
2017. Mm-hmm. And, but ours, it was a very different feeling. It was definitely more working photographers, people who were doing it for, not that Sue Bryce isn't doing it for real, because, you know, we all love Sue Bryce.
Of course.
But, you know, looking at what Sue Bryce does, sometimes it's really hard to make the connection between what, quote unquote, real photographers are doing.
Yeah,
every
like
day.
What I can do. Like, verse. Yeah.
Not that people can't do what she's doing, but it's, you know, it's a different thing. And this is also the time of Creative Live and that type of thing. So I'm like, no, we can do this. This can be done with people who are actually working. People will come in. And so the membership site was born out of that idea that I had at that point in time.
I love how you just have ideas and then you just go. Mm-hmm. It seems, have you always been?
Yeah. And sometimes it's not a good thing because you know me, I can jump around a lot.
Yeah.
The completion of the idea is always a struggle for me. So when I get to actually like visualizing something and then creating it and seeing it launch or to completion, like that's a big deal for me. To be able to.
So would you consider yourself like you're a visionary?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, that's where you thrive.
I'm an idea person, 100%. And I think that's why I'm so successful with my coaching when people are coming to me for marketing ideas.
Absolutely, yes.
Because they're like, well, I don't know how to do this. I'm like, no, this is what you need to do. Like you can leave a coaching session with me and I've given you 10 new marketing ideas that you can implement for your skill set, for your location, and for your genre. And it just runs. It's like, okay, now you just need to do it.
Yes.
And because I've been in the business for 15 years, I can tell people how to do it. I'm like, okay, these are the steps that you need to take. And then we're going to adapt this way or this way, depending on what the outcome is. But There's no shortage of ideas, and it drives my husband crazy, and my brain.
It's your strength. That's what I love about you.
Yeah, it is my strength, but my brain can also race with a lot of things, and so I'm trying to actually, in my old age, take note of these things and realize, okay, write it down so you can let it go. Write it down so you can let it go.
And, oh, interesting.
And realize that you don't have to act on it today. Let's finish what we started over here. Write it down. It will still be there tomorrow and manage that a little bit because the idea machine never stops.
The other day I watched a training from my mentor and it was, I think, called The Power of Constraint, of constraining your focus. Okay, we only have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to rapid fire some questions if that's okay.
Yep.
What is one thing people get wrong about you?
I think sometimes people think because I have more of a forward personality that I'm very, very forceful. Mm. No, I'm passionate.
Passionate and direct.
Yeah, and I am direct, but I'm not hurtful. I don't want to hurt people's feelings, but I will be direct.
So. Okay, if you could start a business tomorrow, completely unrelated to what you do now, what would it be?
Oh, I'd want to be like a travel YouTuber or something.
Okay. Take your camera, hit the road.
Mm-hmm. Hit the road.
Sounds like fun.
But I have to give the editing to somebody else because yeah, I would just take all the trips and they'd never, the videos would never see the light of day. I would go on the trips.
Okay. What book has shaped your career the most or you recommend the most or find the most useful?
Oh, I love reading books.
Mm-hmm.
So The E-Myth. I think was really, really key in
Michael Gerber
and understanding. I love mm-hmm. the book Rocket Fuel as mm. well, which is the same type of idea of like you have your strengths. So you need to have a partner that has different strengths than you. So you can come together and be successful. Right now, I'm listening to one of Julie Andrews' autobiographies.
And is that right?
Yeah. What that is teaching me is the power of words and dialogue and communication and conversations. Because she, being British, very British, uses words in a different way. And even when she's describing some of her experiences in show business that were not great, the way she talks about them is so like just pleasing. You wouldn't think that anything wrong happened, but just her use of vocabulary is super. It's super. That's to me such a basic word. It's super impressive, right?
Well, we'll work on our words.
You know, and then Julie Andrews would say, yeah. Yes, it was incredibly delightful. You know,
it's inexplicable in its delightfulness.
Right. So those of you, and then I think the one that I like the most is called The Mountain Is You.
Oh, I loved that book.
The Mountain Is You is a book all about how we stand in our own way.
It's so true. Self-sabotage.
Yes,
self-sabotage. Brianna Wiest.
And mm-hmm. I have listen to this book on repeat many, many times. And
I love
every
it
time, well. Mm-hmm. Every time I get something out of it that I didn't get before.
Great. Okay, last question.
Okay.
What is one final thought you would want to leave your listeners with?
Oh, gosh. I think people don't understand how much I truly, truly care about this industry and the people in it. Mm. Helping people build photography businesses is not about my ego. It's not about it's about making life better for them. And mm-hmm. when I know that I've helped someone make their life better, it also means that I've probably made their children's lives better.
The ripple
effect. Like the ripple effect mm-hmm. of that, how passionately I feel in wanting to help people. And when I see people, like if I could just coach all day for free, I would. I love it so much. You know, the CFO in my family would be very disappointed if I did that.
Of course. You have to make money.
Gotta make some cash. But how truly, truly, like when I sign off on my marketing emails and said I'm your biggest cheerleader, I'm absolutely your biggest cheerleader.
You really mean it.
Like,
right?
Yeah. It's not just a fancy thing. It's like, no, I want everyone to succeed. I believe that there's room for everyone to succeed. I believe that there is a way to make your business that not only makes your life better, that can make next generation's lives better. Mm. And I believe that in my soul.
Mm.
And sometimes that's, you know, those are the types of things that don't always communicate well through a mm-hmm. podcast or a blog post mm-hmm. or social media.
That's really beautiful, Dori. Thank you so much for sharing and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for the interview. This is super, super fun. If you guys want to hear more from Heather, you can head over to her podcast, which is called what?
Flourish Academy. If you just look up my name, Heather Lottinen, at the Flourish Academy, you'll find me.
Yeah, you'll find her and we'll make sure that we have all her contact information in the show notes. So Heather, thank you so much. This was fun.
Thank you.
And we will see you all next time on the Focal Points Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to head over to the show notes page at blog.enphoto.com/podcast. That's blog.enphoto.com/podcast. Get the download for this program and link to a wonderful, wonderful 75% off special for your first sample order from Enphoto. You don't want to miss it.